Hi there, folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima McGinn, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Native Shark, which is an online platform for learning Japanese. And what Native Shark do is they make learning Japanese really, really simple. So you just show up, click a button that says study now, and the platform will then show you exactly what you need to learn next based on your progression. Now, this may sound simple, and in practice it is, but the way it's designed means that students who use Native Shark once a day for 4 to 5 months can complete the equivalent of over 2 years of university study. And what they're also unique in is that they teach all of the types of Japanese that you wouldn't normally get in traditional schools or textbooks. And if you've ever studied with one of the more common textbooks that foreigners usually pick up, you've probably noticed that there are a lot of sentences or conversations in there that you'd never really hear in real life, and vice versa. Some of the stuff you actually hear when you're out and about in Japan is never really covered in these traditional textbooks. So this isn't the case with Native Shark. It's very well grounded in everyday spoken Japanese, whether it's casual or formal language. And you can really expect, like one of the students writes in their reviews, you can really expect to be picking up the sort of little nuances that no one would expect a non-native speaker to use. And that's pretty rare for most Japanese courses. So yeah, really, really useful platform. And since you've heard about it here on the podcast, you also get an extra little bonus. If you sign up using the URL nativeshark.com/NTI, we'll link to it in this episode's show notes. That's native without an E, so N-A-T-I-V shark, all one word, .com/NTI. Use that link to sign up and you'll get a double length free trial. So 2 weeks free instead of the one. And you can sign up for that free trial without having to put any credit card or anything of the sort in there. So give it a go. You won't regret it. All right. So before we dive into today's episode, which is another recording of our Wednesday Clubhouse and now also Facebook Live, Japan Real Estate Chat Rooms, just a quick shout out and a big thank you to everyone who's been leaving reviews on the iTunes store for this podcast. It really makes our day every time we read one of those. And I thought I'd also share a couple of them with you today because we haven't done that in a while. And also because hopefully it might encourage you to pause for a second and do the same. We'd really appreciate it. Okay, so Simon James from Australia writes, amazing content. Ziv's podcasts are the best source of information for investing in the Japanese real estate market. Also, if you're looking to invest in Japan, I can recommend Ziv as a genuine realtor. Well, not realtor, Simon, buyer's agent. So thank you for that. And another one, this one from The Showing in the U.S., no BS, straight to the most useful info. Thank you. I'm a Japanese permanent resident with real estate investing and management experience in the U.S. So I only really need information specific to Japanese markets, not necessarily general real estate investing information and strategies. And this is absolutely perfect. Ziv cuts to the chase and is up on the most current information and market trends, lending, etc. And the episodes are clearly titled to access the information you need most. I have not found anything else like it. Thank you, Ziv. Amazing content. Well, thank you, folks. Again, really appreciate your kind words and reviews, and mainly the fact that you actually took a minute or two of your precious time to write them. So if you'd like your review to be featured next, please do the same. Hop over to the iTunes store, leave us a short written review, or even just a star rating. Your word of mouth means the world to us, and it does help us reach more people. So we're really, really, truly grateful for it. Okay, so for today's episode, we've got another nice long Clubhouse again chat for you. And on this episode, we've got Parker Allen joining us. He's the second half of the Aki Andy Naka team. So you're already familiar with Matt Ketchum, if you've been listening to the podcast, the other co-founder of Aki Andy Naka. And together they answer some questions on the challenges of doing it on your own. So looking for homes in the Japanese countryside, in particular vacant or abandoned homes, via Akiya Bank websites and local municipalities. And then we take some questions from the audience on foreclosed properties, which are sold mainly via court auctions here in Japan. Again, how one gets access to them, what are the risks and various challenges involved in doing this on your own. And other questions regarding larger commercial spaces in Tokyo, freehold versus leasehold land. Leasehold land does exist in Japan. It's not the it's not very common, but it does exist. Renovation costs of these spaces, zoning regulations, and even farmland restrictions, and much, much more. So a really in-depth conversation about a variety of topics. Really one of the deepest dives we've had to date. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side.
And Parker, we've got you on. Welcome. I'll do a quick introduction. Yes, so my name is Parker Allen. Together with Matt, I'm a co-founder of Akian Inaka. I also run a PR consulting firm, Parthenon Japan. So Matt and I started Akian Inaka last August. We specialize in helping people in the international community delve into the Japanese countryside, and we specialize in finding the weirdest damn properties that are out there. So thank you for letting us join the discussion today.
Cool, thank you for joining. Okay, and this is just an open Q&A forum. You know, anyone in the audience can feel free to ask a question if they have about either purchasing, investing, or Akia type properties that Matt and Papa are more familiar with. Sometimes when the audience is small, we'll just ask questions amongst ourselves and discuss amongst ourselves the ins and outs of property, because this is also recorded for Ziv's podcast. Ziv, do you want to give a quick plug to your podcast so people know where to find this?
Yeah, so we're the Japan Real Estate Podcast. We're the only ones out there, as far as I'm aware. And we can be found anywhere, really. So if you just Google Japan Real Estate Podcast or look in the iTunes store, or on Spotify, Amazon, Japan Real Estate Podcast is all you need to look for. And we discuss everything. We started with a focus on buyer's guides and investment properties, but we've very quickly branched out to anything to do with real estate in Japan. And I think we definitely need to have an episode coming up with both of you guys, with Emil and Matt, or Emil and Parker, whoever wants to do the talking, and introduce you on the podcast as well.
That'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you so much. As we were saying just before we kind of kicked off the introduction, a relative of my wife's inherited some land in Tochigi. It's actually in Higashihara, Nasu Shiobara in Tochigi. The postcode is 325-0034. 325-0034 is the postcode. Part of it is mountain. I think about, you know, maybe 500 to 700 square meters of it is mountain, and 300 square meters or so is residential land. I don't know if there's a house on it or not. I think there is not, or if there is one, it doesn't classify as a house or qualify as a house to be lived in. But they want to give it away. It's like, we don't want to deal with it. It's not worth anything to us and not worth the headache. But I also know that they're not very familiar with anything related to potential cost of just acquiring it or receiving it for, you know, or just dealing with it. So I was kind of curious, what are some of the potential, like, so if for example, I'll say, hey, I'll raise my hand and say, I'll take it, give it to me, I'll take it off your hands for free. If I were just to have a piece of land there, what are some of the costs I could, you know, have to deal with just by owning land in that area, like rural land?
That's a good question. Long story short, unless it's a massive piece of land, the taxes actually aren't really that high. When you transfer the ownership, there are some costs that are associated with registering the real estate. We actually work in partnership with a real estate registration specialist called STK Properties, and the procedures are pretty straightforward. Of course, everything is in Japanese, and when you do register the real estate, it's one of those things that you could do yourself, but it is a massive pain in the ass, so it is best to use a specialist. Usually the fees associated with transferring ownership of a property outright, you know, not with a real estate transaction or anything, are usually somewhere between 200 to 400,000 yen, depending on the how many parcels are included in the property. And that means, so each parcel is registered separately. And so you might just have one parcel, you might have 10 parcels. Usually it's like 2 to 5. But that'll also kind of depend on the level of complexity in registering the property. Then after you've done the registration, the major annual expense is the fixed asset tax. And the fixed asset tax is based on the assessed value of the land. And thankfully for the majority of properties in Inaka, or the countryside, this amount is not very high. Depending on the size of the land, I'm guessing you'd be looking at somewhere between 50,000 to 200,000 yen a year annually in fixed asset tax. Other than that, though, I mean, those are your sort of running costs, and there might be some other expenses depending on what kind of land it is, but that's actually a really good area. Ironically, I was just up there over the weekend to go to the onsen, but it's a really beautiful area. This particular postcode is actually really close to the interchange, so you're right, probably about 5 to 10 minutes away from the expressway exit, the Nasu interchange on the Tohoku Expressway. And so you're looking at a piece of property that's actually very easy to access. Of course, it'd be very interesting to see if there are any existing structures that could somehow be used, because the one thing about a lot of the properties that we end up introducing to buyers are properties that have existing construction on them, because building something, anything in Japan to a degree of quality is, you know, you're going to be looking at, you know, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million yen and up, depending on the scale of the building that you're going to be creating. But there are some options that come in under 10 million yen, but to build something decent, it's going to cost, you know, at least around that. So with that in mind, if you've got something, anything that can somehow be used, that's almost always a better deal. But of course, figuring out what that is, I mean, obviously, if it's a barn, then there might be limited utility to that. But even if you've got a small house to work with, you know, I think Japanese people can be surprisingly pessimistic about how you can rejuvenate these places. But Japanese construction is actually extremely sturdy. We do proper building inspections on a lot of the properties that we introduce to potential buyers when we're at the offer stage. And this is also something that can be done for under $1,000 to get a proper licensed architect to come out and do a building inspection. And most of the time, we end up with some things that need to be fixed or remedied. Sometimes there are structural issues that need to be addressed, but I mean, almost 100% of the time, whatever needs to be done is still going to be cheaper than ripping it down and building a new structure. Because one of the things is demolition also costs money. So depending on the size of the building that needs to be demolished, you're looking at, you know, 1 to 3 million yen in demolition fees. So you have to tack that on in addition to the cost of any new construction. So obviously, you know, whatever you do, it's going to cost some money. I would say if you want to somehow utilize an existing structure that's in some state of repairable existence, I'd earmark about, you know, say 5 to 7 million yen to do something decent. But, I mean, you can get in under that maybe 3-4 million yen. But these are about the numbers you need to be thinking about. But as far as just obtaining the property and having it, I mean, that itself is probably going to cost, you know, 500,000 yen-ish. And then, you know, say $1,000 a year in your tax bill. Why not? It's Nasu. It's a beautiful area.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that. I'm not too familiar with the area at all. And I just calculated all the blocks of land, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 parcels in total. And they come to 1,200 square meters, roughly.
That's a pretty decent size.
Yeah. So I think only 2 or 3 parcels of it are residential. Maybe 300 to 400 square meters is residential, and the rest it's a typical residential zoned land, and the rest is mountain zoning.
That's very high. Do you have any idea of what, like, how mountainous that is?
No, but just looking on Google Maps for that area, it doesn't look like mountainous. It's classified as forest. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not very mountainous. It's just that's how they classify it. And, I mean, basically the whole Nasu area is originally forest. So I'm sure what you're looking at is land that was forest, and they've developed some residential plots. And a lot of people bought these properties somewhat speculatively in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And so you've got a lot of properties like this who are owned by people in the Kanto region, in Nasu and in Karuizawa and in Atami and, you know, just all over the place. But
Karuizawa has gone through the roof now, hasn't it?
Sorry, what's that, Ziv?
I'm saying Karuizawa, we've just been looking at some holiday homes for customers there. Karuizawa is very trendy at the moment.
It is, it is. And especially one thing that we're looking at for our clients is a lot of our clients, they're not too married to a specific area, but they want to purchase something that, I mean, with Inaka, it's hard to determine whether a certain area is going to raise in value, but one of the things that we like to look at are sort of those second-tier resort destinations. And obviously, you've got places like Atami and Karuizawa, which are on fire right now because a lot of people are looking to get out of Tokyo due to the COVID pandemic. But you've also got these second-tier areas like lots of areas in Tochigi, including Nasu, are included in this. And they're not as expensive as these, you know, super resort destinations, but there's a lot of cool stuff to do. I mean, there's, you know, beer factory tours to be gone on. There's lots of farms and lots of family-friendly attractions, as well as, you know, onsens out the wazoo. So, I mean, Nasu is actually a pretty interesting place to hang out. It's very, it's rural, but it's also very gentrified in a sense. I mean, it's really, In the UK, you've got the Cotswolds, which is a designated area of natural beauty. And I think Nasu, looking at the topography, is actually very similar.
I've got a question from Raymond in the audience. He's on a train now, so he can't really speak, but he's got a question. If I can float that to the panel.
Let's do it.
Yep. So Raymond's looking at potentially getting into foreclosed properties. And I, from my limited experience, I know that these in Japan are mostly sort of court step auctions. But he's brought up a site that I've seen before as well, 981JP.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you guys have any feedback on that particular site or on auction and foreclosed properties generally or overall?
Well, Parker, do you want to take this, or can I throw away?
Oh, yeah. So how about you start, and I'll fill in the blanks.
Right on. So my personal experience, both just kind of digging through the data myself, but also knowing people who have purchased on foreclosed properties, a.k.a. K-buy is what they're usually referred to as, it's risky as hell. It's super cheap, so that's cool. That's a good thing. If you got some money to throw around, you kind of don't really care. Yeah, why not? The issue with K-buy, bar none, is the fact that you're buying sight unseen. You cannot enter the premises and inspect what it is that you're buying. So you're more or less going on the word of whomever it is that you're, whichever representative it is you're speaking with. So if you like danger and adventure and things like that, yeah, it's probably a good way to, you know, spend $20,000 or so. Whether or not you're actually going to see a return on that, I mean, it's not even that I can't speak to it. It's that it's a complete crapshoot. So far as my experience is concerned, Parker might have more to say on that.
Yeah, you know, getting into the foreclosed properties is kind of like investing in Dogecoin. In that you might find a really good in, and you can find really good deals. The biggest thing you got to be worried about with foreclosed properties is foreclosed properties get foreclosed on because they're not paying their fixed asset tax. And so that's what causes the foreclosure. And so in this situation, obviously these properties oftentimes haven't been maintained. Sometimes you've got the owner who will squat and you have to get them out. And obviously you want to determine what the situation is on that side with any sort of transactions like that. The other major thing you have to be ready for is obviously you cannot finance on a foreclosed property. So you have to have cash in hand ready to, you know, pay the whatever the hammer price is. And so it's definitely more involved than your typical, you know, Inaka transaction. I would say if this is your first foray into Japanese real estate, maybe give it a pass. I mean, this is something to do like for your, you know, second, third, fourth transaction. Me personally, I've bought two pieces of real estate in Japan. Would I do it? If the right deal came across, maybe, but still, I mean, the thing is that, I mean...
You're saying you wouldn't know if it's the right deal, right? Like, you wouldn't know if it's the right deal until you actually purchased it.
Exactly. And so, you're really sort of rolling the dice on that one. And obviously, it's a good deal, but, I mean, even if it's a good deal, if it ends up being a dumpster fire, it could be actually quite difficult to offload it. So that's another thing you have to think about.
Yep. And then another follow-up question from him is, how do you guys find your Inaka properties? I mean, I know that I often see them on the Akiya Bank websites or some of the normal property websites, but are there any more specialized resources specifically for Akiya and Inaka?
Let's let Parker run with this one. This is his first time.
Yeah, so, I mean, with what we do, so we've basically turned the traditional real estate business model on its head, because traditionally, real estate agents work on a 100% transaction success fee basis. So you don't have to pay the real estate agent anything until you close on a property. So from the customer perspective, that's, of course, great. It's cheap and there's no risk. And so, especially if you want to go around, you want to kick tires, you want to see what it's like, of course you can go out and do this. But the reason why Akiya and Inaka exists is because this process is, it becomes a lot of work for the prospective buyer, because you cannot go to just any old real estate agent and say, I want to buy a property in Inaka. They'll either tell you to go away, or they'll basically bring you towards an area with higher priced properties. But obviously, going out and looking at these properties, especially if they're far apart from each other, is a very cost intensive journey. And when you're dealing with a countryside locale that you're not that familiar with, there's a lot more research that you have to do. So if you're working with a traditional real estate agent, they're not getting paid to do this, so they're not really very motivated or enthusiastic about doing it. So what we do at Akiya and Inaka is we actually have made our service based on research and consulting. So our clients do pay us for research. They pay us to assist them through the walkthrough process and to assist them through the transaction process as well. So actually, we are not real estate agents. Instead, we work in partnership with a real estate agency. And really what we do is we take out all of the sort of difficult parts of going through and dealing with real estate agents and having to explain yourself to these oftentimes less than enthusiastic to work with foreigners, rural real estate agents. And we really take out a lot of those sort of question marks and difficult situations that people get themselves into. I mean, and we've even heard stories of people who are fluent in Japanese, who have lived in Japan for decades, go to, for instance, somewhere in the Boso Peninsula in Chiba, to the real estate agent who has a property and say, I want to buy this, here's the money, let me buy it. And they told them no.
Yeah, that's been our experience as well.
Yes, and so this sort of stuff happens. And obviously, you know, every situation is different, and that's not to say that you can't do this. Obviously, lots of people do, but what we do is we want our clients to make a good investment, and we want them to look at each property with all of the information that they need in order to make a decision whether or not that it's a good idea for them. And so, obviously, with our service, you'll pay more, but you do get what you pay for, and we have very high client satisfaction because we take out a lot of the guesswork and the BS that you have to endure when you're going through this process on your own.
Understood. So to answer Raymond's question, obviously one of the options would be to go through you guys. But for somebody who does want to do it on their own, where would they actually I mean, putting aside for a moment whether the agents will work with them or not, and whether it's going to take a lot of driving or not, where what are the resources that you would normally be accessing just to get a short list of potential properties? Is it the normal websites, the Akia banks? Do you contact agents in particular areas directly, or is it all of the above, or is it something else?
I'd say the contacting of the agents is maybe like step 1.5, if not step 2. The first step is, as you just said, you know, with the Akia banks, go to Sumo, go to homes.com or .co.jp. I mean, a lot of, maybe not a lot, but at least a certain percent of what we go through is the publicly available information. One of the major problems with it, though, that anybody will run into is that the data behind all of this is very, very poorly maintained. And so if you find property X on Sumo, and you also find it on homes.co.jp or another, really any website, right? They're not going to be the same, or at least frequently they aren't, right? And so there's a whole lot of pain that goes into figuring out what the hell it is you're actually looking at in the first place.
Well, I would also say that, you know, the first step in any of our consultations is trying to determine one or multiple candidate areas. And really, this is where you have to start, because if you're trying to look, you know, everywhere in Kanto or everywhere in Tohoku or everywhere in Kansai, you're going to drive yourself crazy. And so I think if you want to do it the smart way, you really want to look at different areas and start to understand different areas. You go out there, drive around, look, sort of get a sense for, you know, is this the sort of place you'd like to own property? Is this the sort of place that maybe you could start an Airbnb? What's this area like? And then from there, you can figure out what resources are available in that local area. Because each local area, you know, each local district has their local Akia bank. Each locality has their own local real estate agents who oftentimes are in charge of a lot of the properties that are on the market, but not always. And I would say if you can find an area, then that's a good place to get started. Also, in terms of, you know, people who are willing to help you for free, real estate agents are not often going to be very helpful for the international market. I would say the one glimmer of hope in, you know, just knocking on the door and trying to get some progress are the local Akia banks, because they are obviously local bureaucrats, and some Akia banks are super helpful. Some Akia banks are absolute garbage.
Most.
So if you can find a helpful Akia bank, then they will help you. And, you know, you can go and look at properties and, you know, you can get started.
On that note, Parker, actually, with regards to helpful Akia banks, out in Chiba, the Nagara district, which is, what, directly west of Mobara, is extremely helpful and very, very open to speaking to pretty much anybody who is interested in Akia or just even, you know, moving out there kind of thing. So that's definitely one spot that we think of as, you know, kind of shining sort of example of the good sort of things that can happen with regards to Inaka investment.
Yes, and sorry, I actually have to jump off because I've got a conference call at 2, but thank you to everyone in this channel today for listening to our discussion, and if anyone is interested in checking out Akia and Inaka, you can find us pretty easily at akiainaka.com, or look at the bio of myself or Matt, and you can find the links to our social profiles as well. Thank you so much for including me in this discussion. I hope you guys have a great discussion after I've hopped off.
Thanks. And a thank you from Raymond, too. He also has to go to an appointment at 2 o'clock, but he said thank you very much for the info. Go for it, Emil.
Cheers. Thank you so much. It was great meeting you. And thanks for all your pointers. I'll see if I can get that parcel of land.
You can try to introduce Tracy. She said she's moving around, so she might not be able to respond, but you can give it a shot.
Sure. Okay, cool. And we've got Tracy who's joined us, the Minpaku Queen. So Tracy runs a short-term rental, or in Japan we call it Minpaku. People often understand the Airbnb-style properties as that, but there's a lot of different platforms and methods that you can do short-term rentals under 1 month. So Tracy is a consultant and also a short-term rental property manager. So anything Minpaku related, short-term stay related, she can definitely help answer your questions.
Yeah, but we can kick it on. Does anyone else have any other questions about the process? I found it quite interesting, the discussion we had about the foreclosed type properties.
Well, if we want to kind of riff on that a little bit more, or at least I kind of do. I do know a few people who have purchased them and have turned it into, you know, like I'm not sure if success is in the terms of like billions of dollars and stuff like that. But they managed to pay it off just via turning it into not an actual Airbnb, but, you know, Minpaku kind of situation within 2 to 4 years, right? It can work, but again, it's highly, highly, highly risky. It's you know, it's kind of fun and whatnot, but at the same time, like, you literally cannot know what it is that you're getting yourself into until you make the purchase.
So that's the foreclosed properties you're referring to.
Yes, but, yeah. Right, the K-buy kind of thing.
Matt, are your foreclosed properties that you're talking about, are they sort of in the more the rural areas or within Tokyo?
So keep in mind, though, when I first moved to Japan, I was in super rural coastal Iwate. So when you say Inaka and rural, I immediately think of that, which is not easy. Like, Izu is certainly far, far less metropolitan than Tokyo, Yokohama, these sort of places. And it does qualify as Inaka, but again, I kind of always immediately think of middle of absolutely nowhere.
When that I'll be more specific. 23 wards of Tokyo.
Outside of that, but we're talking, you know, 90-minute driving distance outside of Shinagawa, let's say.
Okay. Yeah, right. I think one thing to really clarify with questions that we have from, like, you know, from Raymond, I think he had to message you, was when he's talking about foreclosed properties, is he really looking at sort of in Tokyo or outside?
Super good question.
Because I've had lots of clients ask me, look, you know, because my focus is on in Tokyo, and so most of the properties I deal with are between 50 million yen and 150 million yen. So, like,
unforeclosed?
So no, not foreclosed. I don't deal with foreclosed properties. My typical clients, right, in Tokyo, the ones often that are just looking to buy their own family home, 50 million to 100, like, so half a million US dollars to 1.5 million US dollars is kind of the range. I mean, if you're looking for a family home in Tokyo, that's kind of what you're looking at. And some people think, look, I want to get a cheap place in Tokyo. So a lot of the stuff that, like, even a foreclosed one, right, there's businesses that are, like, when they just ask that off the bat, it's okay. If you're looking at that sort of in a place where you can do a cash purchase, right? And often people like that are looking to save money. So most likely they're not going to have, as I say, people that are on a mission to save money are also not looking at, you know, 20, 30, 40 million yen type properties.
Well, I mean, it always depends on the case, right? But yeah, generally speaking, That being said, like, pretty much everybody that I know who has purchased via K-buy, via, like, a foreclosed property, comes in at between, like, get this, between 2 and 4 million yen. That's it. And these are not, we're not talking about Besso, we're not talking about, you know, actual houses, right? We're by and large talking about corporate retreats from companies that back in the 80s, you know, could take their, not even their clients, their actual employees for, you know, a weekend or, you know, whatever the hell it is they wanted to do. And so these, we're talking about, like, 3-4 story, you know, like, complexes, right? And these go for, again, between 2 and 4 million yen. Most of the time, they're a pretty heavy fixer-upper, right? They are convertible, but you've got to throw probably another 10 or so mil into it post-purchase. But again, everybody that I know who has done it, and it's, you know, 3 people, basically, so I'm not talking from a huge kind of database of information, but 3 people that I know who have done this, between 2 and 4 years, they've managed to have it pay itself off.
Oh, yeah, so
I guess that's what they're looking for. Yeah,
so what I wanted to clarify was, you know, it's important to ask that question, because that dynamic is if they are property hunters in Tokyo, and rather than pay market price, they're trying to get a place, instead of paying 70 million yen, they're trying to get a foreclosed place for 40 million.
You're literally aiming a shotgun at your foot. if not
bull. Exactly. Exactly, yeah. It's not something that people with 40 million yen cash are actually able it doesn't match up, right?
And then yeah, that's exactly. And I mean, this is the crazy thing that I think all real estate agents work with, you know, regardless of Yakia or Super New Builds and Mori Family and stuff like that, is Jesus Christ, what the hell is it that you're actually working with? What are the land values?
Before we continue, we've got Miko on the stage. I think she might have had a question there. Miko?
Yes, I do. So it's kind of related to what you are talking about now, actually. So I'm currently looking, I'm not in the immediate future, but maybe within the next couple of years, I'm looking to buy a space for purchasing. The idea is that I'm going to build a 150 or 170 square meter space for a creative community arts center, and also with a cafe in it. And my idea was what you were saying, Emil, is to take a older building in Tokyo and to remodel it. But also, like other people are saying, is that the Japanese are very quite pessimistic about doing that. It's really hard to get them to say, oh, no, you can't do that because it's going to fall down and the inside is old. You're better off knocking it down and making it again. So I guess what I'm wondering is I am eyeing a potential property, though I don't think I'm going to be able to buy it, but it's in Utenji. And as far as I know, it was built in the 70s. It's the perfect kind of shape and layout that I would like to remodel. But one, there's also the cost. The whole entire property is almost equivalent to $1 million. And what the renovation might look like, just as an inside tip, my husband is an architect. He's licensed in America, and he has friends in Japan that are also architects that could help sign it off if he designs it. But so the design fee might be less. But I'm wondering at what kind of if I bought a property like that, and there was somehow an okay to remodel it. I don't know how you convince a Japanese person to say that it's okay to remodel it, but what kind of costs would I be looking at, do you say, for on top of the brokerage fee and remodeling and construction? I don't know what else other kind of fees there might be involved, but
so let me just give sort of the general. Well, I've got a few questions I want to clarify first, and then the general numbers based on that. So is this the building you're looking to buy? So when you're talking Utenji, right? So that's on the Torioka line. So a very prominent area. So my first thing was, when you're looking at a place that big, is this probably about 150 square meters?
Yeah, I can bring or up no. the, I mean, I can look at the specs again.
Sure.
As I got the PDF file for it.
Yeah, I think the two big ones are, like, how old is the building, right?
Let's see here.
Sure. Okay. And whilst we do that, I'll also just talk about some other stuff. Generally, the closing costs, if you were to purchase it, are about 5%. Okay. 3% will be agency fee, standard. And then the rest of the land tax, scrivener fee, any type of insurance. I'm assuming you're going to get a bank financing for this?
I'm looking at doing that. I'm just, my options are kind of, they're open right now. So,
The big one is, okay, if you want to go financing, right, if you can get the financing for it, is it going to be financed as a residential property? Are you going to live there, your primary residence, or is it going to be a business? Okay, and the big difference between these two are, if it's your primary residence, you can get 100% financing for the property, and interest rates are very low, about 0.7%, for example. And you could also get, depending on your income, right? So to get, you can borrow about 7 times your gross annual income if you're a salaried employee, right? And that's, you said your husband is also, if it's a combined household income, So to get 100 million yen, right? So you said it's almost $1 million equivalent. So 100 million yen for this property, your combined household income needs to be around 14 million yen, right? So 14 times 7 is 100 million, is about 100 million. So that's what the banks will kind of give you. And then you can, if you can actually borrow more, for example, if your income was 16 or 17 million yen, your household income, you could actually get another 10 million yen or so of renovation loan, okay, included, okay? Now, yeah, so assume about, say, 5% closing costs, that's on any home purchase, okay, with a typical agency. Renovation costs, in general, if you do, like, for a house, because I don't know this property, I don't know what you may want to change in terms of restaurant or cafe and sort of art space. But for a typical house with new wallpaper, floors, toilet, bathroom, kitchen, on the slightly more expensive side, 1 million yen per 10 square meters.
Okay.
So
for 100, 10 square meters?
Yeah. So wow. 100 square meter house, you say 10 million yen, you can do it more cheaply, say 7 million. And of course you can do it cheaper than that, but a lot of it will be the toilet, the bathroom, the kitchen, these wet appliance areas. What end up being costly. Wallpaper is not so much, to be honest. So it depends on how much needs to be done there, especially if it's a million, if it's like 100, how many square meters is this property?
So this, I have it up now. It says 147 square meters.
Is it a two-story or three-story property?
It's two-story, and on top of that, it has, oh, is that the land? Oh, shoot, the land, okay, so the land itself is 143, but I guess the actual front house is two stories, it's 147, and then behind that, there's a storage space that comes with it, which is not in the PDF, but it's a kura, I think, but, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, so look, just based on the size of that house, like, you know, if you know what, it feels a bit strange, 140 square meters in Utenji for $1 million feels a bit cheap, to be honest. Is it that, and then the next one is, how old is the house?
It says 1972 from February.
is that no rebuild allowed on that property? Is it site construction? And a good way to tell is is it on a road, or is it like a rear property that's behind another house? Is it like a flagpole type?
I don't know if you've been to Utenji before, but if you go out on the station, there's kind of a little shitamachi that's sort of dying at the moment, and it's on that. It's just 2 minutes away from the station, and in fact, the train tracks are right behind the building. It's the property itself.
Okay.
So
the one concern is from the road where you drive the car. To get to the house, if the access path, sometimes there's a driveway, you know, there's maybe two houses. One property is at the front. The second property is actually located behind the front house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like two separate plots of land.
Yeah.
And sometimes for the rear property, there's a driveway to go to the back. Or it's a path. If that's less than 2 meters wide, you can't rebuild on this block of land.
Mm.
Right, and it's called Saiken Chikufuka.
Mm-hmm.
And properties that are Saiken Chikufuka, the land square meterage is about 25 to 50% cheaper.
Mm.
So it sounds, if it's 140 square meters, it sounds like it could, in Utenji, it sounds like it could be a block like that, where a lot of it is, where maybe the path to the front road is less than 2 meters wide. If it's more than 2 meters wide, or exactly 2 meters, then, and you can rebuild, then the land will be regular land value. Okay? Maybe a bit cheaper because of the train tracks, but essentially, if the property burns down, you can rebuild something brand new on it. Right? Whereas with a no rebuild allowed property, you can't get permits to rebuild on the land because the access to the front road too narrow.
Can I chime in for a moment?
Go ahead, Matt.
So I'm curious, why Utenji? Nico, you're working in the creative space. I myself have been running a entertainment
independent music company for about 10 years at this point, so I'm highly invested in creative, right? Mm-hmm. Why Yukenji? That just doesn't compute for me.
Well, at the moment, you know, because I did look at properties in Jiugaoka and Nakameguro, for example, and Daikanyama, and those are just unattainable. I mean, those are way more.
But again, from like the creative point of view, why Nakameguro? Why? I mean, Nakameguro sort of makes sense. Daikanyama, I mean, unit maybe, but there's really not too much going on there so far as the creative space is concerned. So far as I know, anyway, maybe I'm wrong. But I'm curious what your decision process is on this, because as a creative, as somebody who deals with all of this, I don't know anybody who bothers working in those areas.
Actually, can I ask which part of do you live in Tokyo?
I've lived in Tokyo for about 8 years. I currently live in Yukawara, near Otami.
I see. Oh, okay. So I live in Setagaya, close to Komazawa Park. And I've been in Japan for about 12 years myself. And I've lived in the eastern region of Japan in Koto. And I didn't find that to be very, creative, I guess. I don't know if that's the word, but it didn't seem very friendly. I find that from my perspective, a majority of foreign residents tend to live on the western side of Tokyo. Not that I'm targeting them only, but also there are some, like Shibuya is sort of a creative area, Harajuku as well. But the problem is that those prices are not really affordable. But I noticed that some people are, you know, they're starting to migrate out of those spaces because, Harajuku has kind of changed over time. It's not the same as it was, like, in the early 2000s and the 90s.
Right. Ogikubo is actually a really good area right now.
Oh, yeah. And then Shimokitazawa as well. But one of the reasons why I'm looking at a place kind of like Yutenji was mostly... The one is that is proximity to where I live. And also the other reason is that I actually am in contact with quite a few people, in part of this group, and they are also kind of saying the same thing as I am, is Western Tokyo in this area seems to be.
And especially since Corona started, West is best. Everything, again, from my perspective, I could be, you know, totally without other people informing me about this, but everything that I've seen thus far, creative as well as real estate, is things are moving west.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that kind of gut feeling that you have and you've been hearing about is, I would support that.
Additionally, I did visit Yutenji recently, and it looks like it's dying, but there's a lot.
That just means there's opportunity there.
That also means there's opportunity there, and hopefully, since it is right next door to Nakameguro, it's actually walkable from Nakameguro. That I felt it was for.
You're right.
If opportunity.
If it's walkable from Nakameguro, Nakameguro is a decent spot. It's not the best, but it's certainly decent for the creative space. Even after a year and a quarter of coronavirus, there's still things going on there in the art, music, everything. If it's walkable from there, I'd actually support that. You sort of turned my opinion around on that
one. that was my way of thinking. It doesn't have to be Yutenji. I just happened to find this spot.
The other interesting thing, though, as Emil and Ziv were commenting on, is, you know, price-wise, just within Tokyo anywhere, right, is going to be super-duper expensive no matter what.
Right.
And down here in Yukawara, near Atami, I know people who are have bought up ryokan, full ryokan, multi-story, multi-room, gigantic ryokan, and are currently converting them into artist-in-residency spaces, right? That is a thing. I don't know if I'd call it a trend just yet, but I certainly know right now four people come to mind that are doing this just in the greater Atami area.
Okay. Yeah, well, I know, but the other argument is accessibility, because a majority of foreigners do live in Tokyo, and they do have these sort of creative spots, you know, for example, in Ome in Tokyo, in Saitama, for example, as well, and also in Yokohama, or even
Fujino is another big one.
Yeah, but the people that live in Tokyo, they don't want to go that far. So I'm trying to find a solution, hopefully in Tokyo, and that's my current way of thinking.
So, Miko, I do want, like, there's a few points to look at. I did just send you an Instagram message. If you can just send me the link so I can have a look at it. But in sort of general speak, right, there's when you want to buy a property in Tokyo. So my focus generally is on residential houses, residential properties. One thing is you need to look at the zoning. Are you able to make this a cafe? Are you actually able to run a business out of this? So zoning is one issue. But then let's assume that you are. The next one is, though, is financing, because we're not talking about just a few million yen. It's more like, you know, 100 million yen. It's, okay, do you want to get bank financing or not? And then if it's yes, there's two ways you can approach it. Is it going to be your primary residence? If so, then you can try to get a home loan for it, a jutaku loan.
Uh-huh.
However, in order to, and that's what I was talking before, you can borrow about 7 times your annual gross household annual income, assuming you don't have any other debts, because that will, of course, impact your borrowing capacity. And you can also borrow the renovation costs as part of that. Depends on your, you know, you have a Japanese name, so I presume you're a Japanese nationality?
No, actually, no, I'm American.
No, okay. All right, well, depending if you have permanent residency or what have you, you may be, or how long you've been in Japan, how long you've been employed. You could still get 100% financing or maybe 80% financing. But again, interest rates will be under 1%, about 0.6, 0.7% is what we're seeing now for home loans. But to also be considered a home loan, 50% or more of the property has to be for your personal residence. So it's a two-story house. Mm-hmm. Let's say the whole top floor, you know, it's about 140 square meters. Let's say 70 square meters is your primary residence, and 70 square meters is for this space of the art, the creative space and cafe.
Uh-huh.
Then as long as it's over 50% is your primary residence, then you can still get the whole thing under a home loan. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
However, if it's going to be, if that's not the case, or it's 100% sort of a business kind of approach and not going to be your primary residence, you need to look at an investment loan, and that will be more along the lines of 20 to 40% down payments. And
okay.
So the bank will only give you 60 to 80%, and interest rate will be about 2% or so. Anywhere from like 1.8 is like the cheaper investment loan, but 1.8 to like 3%.
Okay.
And you need to provide the full business model. That's just for the property. And then renovation costs, as I said, I don't have experience with like restaurant or cafe fit-outs or gallery fit-outs, so I don't know. I can't speak to that. But in terms of a house, what I can speak to is, you know, a good rule of thumb for someone who just wants to get a renovation company to come and do the work. And that doesn't really involve any architectural work, because it's not a redesign of the property. It's really just, you know, maybe one wall will come down, right, that's not structural, but doesn't include any architectural work, about 1 million yen per 10 square meters. Maybe you can get it to a bit cheaper than that, but if you're looking at 140 square meter place, you know, it's going to be over 10 million yen of just renovation costs, again, for a house. For a shop fit out or gallery space fit out, I can't really speak to that. That's out of my friends
in that space seem to think that to bring a place up to speed from scratch, if it's a reasonably sized space, and I think maybe what Miko is talking about is a bit bigger than your average restaurant or bar, but for a medium-sized or slightly on the big side restaurant or bar, they seem to think that it's about 50,000 US to deck it out.
Okay. 50,000, if it were as big as, like, it's about 150 square meters, so that it would be about that much?
No, smaller than that. So I think they were referring to a place that seats about 25, maybe 35 people at most.
I see.
And
okay.
So I'm guessing about 30 square or so, maybe 40, 50 at most. But then they're talking about the full comfortable seating and the bar and the cooking facilities and so forth. So maybe adjust based on whatever you're planning to do there. Emil, do you want to maybe do a quick reset? We got a lot more people in the audience now.
Just before we get on to do the reset, Mikko, thank you. You just sent me the shot. Okay, one of the things to keep in mind for this property that you just sent, it's leased land. Okay, now I understand why it's cheap.
It's so for that
area. Yeah, it's a leasehold, so you have to pay the monthly land rent
Don't do it. I have a friend who's a real estate agent, and she did mention that there was a lease land fee on top of the mortgage.
Well, that puts you at the mercy of the landowner, though. That they can decide at any time that you need to clear off.
No, yes and no. This is the old lease. It says 30 years, but it's an old lease contract, so you might be able to renew automatically. And unless the property is in a state of disrepair, the landowner may not be able to reject a renewal similar to a typical lease. It doesn't say how much. I don't see exactly how much time, how many years are remaining on this current lease.
The actual thing, I think it said it was, how much was it? 15 years of leased land value, and my friend, she mentioned. That after that the lease would go away, and then I would only have to pay the mortgage after that. She's Japanese, and she's getting her license is on the way for being a fudosanya, but that's what she mentioned to me.
Can you just repeat? I kind of missed what you said. Can you repeat what you said about
I asked her about that, and she said property rental fee is 127,000 yen. That's 49,000 per month for 20 年間. で残りは15年間は28.2万円になるかな。She said.
So it's going to increase?
No, it'll increase because of the property rental fee, and then after 20 years, it'll decrease. No, and then for the remaining of the 15 years, it'll be of the lease, it'll be 28,000.2 won, and for that's the remainder, apparently.
Of the lease, then, yeah. 28 won. So right now it's 127,000 yen, and it's going to go, it sounds like it's going to go change at one stage to 280,000 yen.
Emil, I was going to ask, do the banks actually approve mortgages for leasehold?
So the other thing to keep in mind is, so some banks will be strict on, so some banks don't do leased land. Some properties, some banks will do leased land, but they won't. This one, it says it's the old QHO, it's the old lease contract type, which is the strongest strength for the tenant. All right. Some of the new ones, you can't actually renew. Like, you just forfeit the land and the building at the end of it. But this one is, if it's one of the stronger ones, then the bank can actually loan you the full 35-year term if it's for residential. However, some banks, what's also common is they'll say, look, you have, 20 years remaining on the lease, even though you can potentially renew it, we're only going to give you a loan for the remaining 20 years. So instead of giving a typical 35-year home loan, they'll give you it's based on a 20-year term, which significantly reduces the amount that you can borrow. Because instead of having 35 years to pay, you only have 20 years. So your monthly repayment doesn't change, but the borrowing capacity will be reduced by almost half. That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's something else. Look, whether this property is the right one or not, it feels like it's an extra issue. The property itself looks like it's on a nice street. It is a shopping, like a shoten, a shogyo zoned place. So you can actually also build the cafe or whatnot. You should be okay for this particular zoning. But yeah, when you said that size for 100 million yen in Utenji, I mean, it did feel much too cheap. But I guess that's why.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your advice and long. Yeah, a little bit longer, but thank you.
No, that's fine. I'm happy to help. And so we can give you, I guess, a clearer answer, but just based on what you've said, that's this extra complexity because it's a leased land scenario.
Just as a follow up, so as my friend said, that after that 20 years is up and then the Nakori is Jugonen. Does that mean I would become the owner and I wouldn't be kicked out of the property?
No, not at all. So that's I was a bit confused by that. So the next 20 years, you said the payment is going to be the 127,000 yen a month of what the current land lease is. But then after that 20 years is up, the remaining another 15 years, it goes up to 280,000 yen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I kind of didn't understand that. But essentially, no. Like with leased land, is always leased land. You're not going to get ownership at some stage of it unless you buy it from the seller. But it's not built into the contract.
Okay.
Yeah. So right, I think you want to re-clarify your understanding, mate. You're not going to own it at any stage. You're not going to own it at any stage, and lease and rental the land rental fee is not going to be free at any stage.
Okay. All right. Thanks
so just re-clarify what she meant or her understanding or your understanding of what she sent you.
Okay, all right.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
This is entirely too complex.
Too complex. All right. Well, it's not. It's just the first good one that I found. I'm sure there will be others, but yeah, thank you.
Right. Good luck, though. Good luck. But yeah, it's definitely helped that, yeah, coming into this space, like, this is an open kind of discussion and we share our sort of points and you may disagree with us at the end of it or you may end up going ahead with it. But yeah, we just try to share our insight and give you a different perspective or some other potential, caveats or things to consider when looking at these properties. So hopefully it was beneficial.
Oh, no, yeah, that's very good because, otherwise... my friend would have to tell me in Japanese and I'd probably miss some of the points she's trying to make, so thank you.
Yeah. I am going to say what is kind of common for people that want a bit of a gallery space or an art place like this is because financing is challenging, again, I don't know what your existing house is like, but people will rather buy their personal house and make the first floor the art or gallery space and live up top. That way they can purchase the whole property. But again, you said you already live in the area, you already have a property. So if you already own that, if you already own a separate property, it will be difficult to get a typical home loan for another property.
Yeah, we live in a mansion right now. So we're owners of this, of our mansion space.
Yeah. And I've been I talk about in my business mindset is, if you've done this kind of work before, this kind of space, then sure, go ahead and if you're familiar with the business side of it, yeah, go ahead and buy it. But otherwise, maybe just try renting and doing a store. And that way, if it works, great, you can then consider purchase or what have you. But what if it doesn't work? You're stuck with this, you're stuck with $1 million property. Well, not stuck, but the exit costs could be significant.
But that's the other thing with leased land is that your resale value is going to probably drop over time rather than increase, even if the area you're purchased in is doing well overall. Because it's not freehold land, the value of the land is not a factor anymore, and then the resale value of the property is generally going to be declining.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, because I was looking to buy because I was also looking at rentals and Inuki Honpo also, for example, but they all had a lot of 6 months of payment up front of the rent, and then the rent on top of that was something like 40,000 or more for a very small space, which is not what I was looking for. So yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out, but it's also something to consider.
see how you go. But do invite us once you get something up and running for the office party.
No matter what happens, I'll be happy to visit.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, as long as that holds the ball. You got me on Instagram now, so just do send me a DM if you have any other questions or any other properties that you look at that you want me just to scan the flyer. I'll be happy to help out.
Thank you.
Let me do a quick room reset. Thanks everyone for joining Japan Real Estate Club, and we are talking real estate property purchases in Japan, be it your personal residence or an investment property or an akiya, out in the middle of wherever it is that Matt wants to deal with.
Middle of nowhere. That's the correct term is middle of nowhere.
Fuck nowhere, as they'll be saying in Australia.
Exactly.
Sure. If anyone has any questions in the audience, please feel free to push the hand raise icon, and one of us will be able to answer your questions. So I am Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. I help individuals and families buy their personal family home. Ziv, on my right, is a buyer's advocate. He helps investors purchase investment properties around Japan. Matt works with Akiya, so abandoned, vacated properties in middle of nowhere that you've often heard about. There can be maybe some very, very good finds if you like, or a holiday house, or whatever other purpose you may wish. And Tracy, right below me, who is the Minpaku short-term rental queen. She can answer any questions you have about short-term stay, Airbnb style rentals or property management. That's what she does. She consults, and she's also a property manager. So yeah, if anyone has any questions, please feel free to raise your hand and you can come up and ask. Oh, we've got, Amy-san has raised her hand. So hello, Amy, thank you for coming up.
Yes, thank you for having me. Well, I was there when Nico was looking for the guild for the creators, and then she was talking about the Utenji properties as well at the time, and I didn't realize that that was the that type of old one. I just heard that it's a large place and then near the station, so well I thought, oh, okay, that sounds great, but after hearing all the, the details about it, I just wondered, if you're looking for I'm not the professional like you guys, but I just wonder, the commercial area versus residential area, it always, the commercial area is a little bit higher, price than the residence area. And then as long as, the Miko's business is only the cafe and the rental area for the creators, and then creators area, so that doesn't need to be in a commercial area. So I just wondered, in that type of case, maybe better look for the residence area near the commercial area. That would be the better choice. I just wondered, and then if you have any insights about the difference between the zones, the residential and commercials, then maybe good advice for her. I just wondered.
Yeah, so the different zones is there's, residential, there's restricted, the Jukyo Senyo Chiki, there's restricted residential, and then it goes to non-restricted residential, and then there's less. How it works in Japan is there's less and less restrictions as you progress. So the Jukyo Senyo Chiki is the strictest one, and that is residential only. You cannot operate a business. Like, you can't have a cafe in that area.
Oh,
you just
okay.
Cannot.
All right.
Yeah, you can't just open a cafe or a restaurant at any place. Or like a language school or something like that. It's only for strict residential only. And then you have, and what happens as you go to the less restricted zones, I don't remember all the names in detail, but like there's just Jukyo Chiki, it's not Jukyo Senyo Chiki, it's not a restricted residential, it's just residential. If you look at the list, it's like, okay, there's a bunch of different things, like, for example, hotel, ryokan, or the small inn or minpaku stuff, minpaku-related properties, all the way to, like, cafes, restaurants, you know, manufacturing, offices, etc. As you go down, you can slightly get, you can operate more and more businesses. So it doesn't, so in a commercial district, you can actually do almost any type of structure. You can have a residential, like residential will go into almost anything. So you can have a living residence almost any, in any kind of zoning. Okay, so how it works is in Japan is as you get more, so I'll just repeat it one more time, as you get to the more relaxed zones, for example, like a Shotengai, a shopping commercial district, you can put almost any kind of property, probably outside of manufacturing. I think construction manufacturing you may not be able to do, but you can put lots of other kind of stuff, like even a mechanic workshop, etc., inside that zoning, including residential. So what you need to find is the zoning that will allow the cafe area, and the strict residential is not going to be that. I think many of the residential ones will not allow cafe or restaurant type space.
Well, yeah, I just saw that several cafes in the middle of the residence area, which is not that, you know, the commercial shops around there. So I just wondered, yeah, it could be okay. But sometimes you see the restaurant as well, but maybe it's not the fully restricted one. Maybe the Jun something, maybe.
Yeah,
one then.
Yeah, that like Daishu Jukyo Chiki. I'm not sure if you can do residential. I know you can do like a ryokan in those areas because they're not restricted. But again, it's for people to stay there, right? It's for people to live or to stay and sleep in those areas. It's not for people to have food and dining.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you just need to make sure. And especially like around Yutenji area, for example, even though there's a lot of houses, I think, and those little cafes, they'll need to be in the right zone. So, not just any residential can be that. And so if you check the list, go to the ward office and check, you know, what on the Yoto Chiki, maybe like Yoto Chiki Seigen, like, you know, zoning restrictions, maybe they'll have a list of what you can operate in which zones and just look, okay, for cafe, this is the minimum sort of zoning I need to be able to run a cafe in this area is how I would do it.
Okay, yeah, well, thank you. Well, I didn't know about how to distinguish, but yeah, maybe yeah, they are. But yeah, but at least for the Miko's Yutenji property, yeah, sounds like too good to be, too good price to do something. Yeah, I just wondered.
Yeah, well, with the leaseland, look, I mean, leaseland is not terrible. It's cheaper because it's a lease contract. You're paying for the lease rights, like the rental rights, which have a value, of course, but you don't have ownership. And so it's cheaper because the market value is less. It's less attractive to people. And so when you sell it, it's going to be cheaper as well. But I think in this case, it doesn't sound like Miko is looking to make a capital profit on it. She's just looking for a facility to run a business out of. So it may make sense in that way. And also, you know, the rental payment and what have you is going to be a tax deductible business expense. Because it's essentially lease cost. So there are some benefits to it. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm not looking to resell because it is supposed to be a community center. I don't know about the benefits of registering as an NPO yet. I'm still looking into that, but that's probably for a different talk. But it might have to be, just for the sake of simplicity, be something like a kabushi kaisha in the end, like in the future. But reselling is currently not on my mind at the moment.
I think when we talk about resale, it's not necessarily a profit or a business strategy. It's just a matter of exit strategy. So what happens if and when for any reason the business doesn't work or your life circumstances might change and you don't really have anything to do with that particular property anymore, then at least you want to try to get some of your capital back and not just have it all as sunk costs. That's what we're referring to by resale.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying. Yeah. Then, yeah, in that case, that is something to think about. But yeah, I am, other than the exit strategy, I am looking to keep it for the long term as long as possible. So, yeah.
Yep. Understood. And Emil, I've just noticed we've got some people in the audience who are actually not in Japan. So if anyone's got any questions about the process of buying or financing or investing or holiday homes that are not specific, not specifically related to people who live in Japan, if you've got questions about how to do all of these things as remote buyers or remote owners of properties, then we can definitely advise on that as well. Feel free to raise your hand and come up to the stage.
And Amy, so whilst we do wait for some people to raise their hand, I just searched online. So if you do a Google search for Yoto Seigen Ichiran, you'll see also for the different types of Yoto Seigen Ichiran, it's a list of what the restrictions are based on the different zoning. If you want to have a store, what kind of store and the size of your store, if you want to have an office, if it's a hotel, etc., it would say, you know, for each zoning, you'll have like a maru or batsu or some conditions. And for a cafe, you can see if
yeah, I check it out. Yeah.
So if yeah, anyone else would like to come up, please push the hand raise icon and you can bring you up to come and answer some of your questions.
I just want to say to Emmy that I sent her a message in Instagram, so thank you.
All right, yeah.
If no one else got a question, I got a question that's probably more directed towards Matt. We've got a customer who's recently purchased a holiday home out in, from the Tokyoites perspective, it's probably in Naka, like in Hita Prefecture down in Kyushu. And he's looking at other properties as well. And some of the things that he regularly runs into when he's investigating them is that because of the size of the land that they're sitting on, parts of the land are classified as farmland, which means that you have to belong to the local farmers association and be qualified to actually own them. And since he's a bit of a hobby farmer, but he's definitely not looking at the properties for that purpose. So he's asked, and from my understanding, the legal and practical side of dividing up, like if he wants to just buy the property itself plus a bit of land that's not going to be classified as farmland, it's not really a challenging procedure to just separate the right. title deeds into a few separate parcels, and then the owner can hang on to the excess land, if you can call it that, and then they can sell the other parts of the property or the other title deeds as standard properties. Am I right in telling him that? Like that the only challenge is really convincing the seller to do that?
Right. So, for example, I am associates with some people right on the outskirts of Karuizawa, which if by this point you haven't recognized, I'm kind of anti-Karuizawa, but the outskirts are great. They're in the same exact situation, right? What happens in that municipality is that they generally just don't really care, right? The main reason for designating, you know, farmland with a capital F versus, you know, residential or anything aside from farmland is that you're going to be you're making produce, you're operating a business, right? And so on the outskirts of Karuizawa, they have farmland, but they are not licensed to be farmers. What they do is they grow their own food, right? That's pretty much it. And occasionally, you know, they'll give somebody a bushel of you know, corn or whatever it is that they're growing.
That's if the local farmer union actually allows them to join under that sort of thing, right?
Precisely. And so this does kind of to me seem a bit of a cop-out, but it is the truth in that, you know, it does depend on where you are and what the farmers union wants, what the municipality wants, things like that. There are certainly cases of it not being an issue. There are certainly cases of it being a very big issue. There are also certainly cases of it being kind of an issue, but if you can sort of, you know, weasel your way through it, it's not much of one. So, I mean, to answer your question, really, I'd want to talk to the person to see what is actually up with their particular circumstances.
But technically speaking, let's say that a local farmers union is really strict on having serious farmers only. There isn't anything limiting him from, assuming the owner or the seller agrees, there's nothing limiting them from splitting up the title deeds and,
no.
Right?
No. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, that was all for me. So I guess, Emil, if nobody else has any questions or wants to discuss anything in particular, we can probably start wrapping it up. We've been at it for an hour or 20 minutes now.
Sure. All right. That sounds good.
Go ahead.
I'll let you guys wrap it up.
Yep. So thanks, everyone. We're doing this every Wednesday at 1:30. And if anyone's got a private discussion that they want to have, and they're not too keen on having it on the public stage or being recorded, feel free to click on our bios. So again, Emil's a real estate agent in Tokyo dealing mainly in family homes. I myself deal mainly in investment and holiday homes anywhere in Japan. Matt does Akiya and abandoned homes. And Tracy, did I just see your microphone flicker over there?
Yes, you did. Can you hear me?
We can.
I just wanted to put a plug in for me. You saw it yesterday, Ziv. I've just finished my magic calculator. So if you're ever wanting to know how much money you can earn in Minpaku in Japan on all different size houses, on all different size properties, I've actually just created a little calculator. So, you know, just send me a DM and I can walk you through it just in case you want to know if the numbers make sense for you. So that's my little plug for the day.
Yep. So Tracy, if you haven't figured it out yet, is the short-term stay queen. She does everything to do with short-term stays and guests and Airbnb type leases. So feel free to click on any of our profiles and either send us a message or just follow us if you want to be notified about the room again. And we're always happy to talk shop offline as well. And if anyone else has anything to ask, raise your hands quickly. Otherwise, we'll probably wrap up in a minute or two. So thanks everyone for joining. So there you go. If you're still with us, congratulations to you. That was a super deep dive into some of the more creative and unusual aspects of Japan's real estate property market. Definitely one of the more interesting Q&A sessions that I remember here on the podcast. So I hope you found value in it. And if you'd like to join us again, we're on Clubhouse every Wednesday on the Japan Real Estate Room, which is in the Japan Real Estate Club. Really easy to find. And again, there's now also a Facebook live stream at the same day and time. Japan Real Estate is the business page. And you can just look for a Japan Real Estate live stream event on Wednesdays. There's not going to be many of those. And we can take your questions there on Facebook as well via written comments and float those to the panel for answering via audio, which we've already done in the past few weeks. Some really good questions coming up on Facebook as well. And if you can't make it on that particular time slot, but you do have questions that you'd like to ask, yeah, feel free to mail your questions in as well on info@nippontradings.com. That's NIPPON tradings with an S .com, or one word, info@nippontradings.com, or simply via commenting on this episode, wherever you might have found it, and we will make sure to answer them for you on the next session. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you are already in Japan on some sort of a more temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, and also if you're considering setting up a local company or branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiry, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners and our clients. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com all one word, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating, review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, wherever you're tuning in from, or just drop us a line in the comments section or wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.